Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for December 30th, 2012. Koyo Kubota here. So glad you joined us at the end of the year like this. I think it's a time for reflection. You kind of take stock of the past year and what's been going on in the world, in our families, and the time, you know, when nature goes into hibernation in the wintertime, and in a sense, we check our roots too. Of course, wintertime things are kind of quiet, but in the plant world, the trees lose their leaves, but a lot of activity going on under the ground in the roots. They're sort of strengthening their roots. And being part of nature, I think human beings, we do the same thing during the winter time, kind of get a cozy feeling, you know, hunker down a little bit like, and we strengthen our roots. Well, this morning we are very privileged and honored for have our Dharma glimpse, Ken Muyo. He is formerly from the Milwaukee area, and he recently retired, he and his wife Jennifer, and they retired to Washington State. And Ken Muyo was part of our LM2 group. So, for our Dharma glimpse today, Ken Muyo Sensei.
Good morning from Port Townsend, Washington. 2012 has been quite a year, not one that any of us will soon forget. There have been many upheavals in our lives. Some in our Sangha have lost parents and friends and family members. Some were able to marry the love of their lives because of changes in the law. We're about to go over a fiscal cliff. We have experienced great waves of commotion and emotions due to unheard of storms and horrible assaults on children, teachers, leaders, and temple goers. It's easy to get caught up in a sense of insecurity and anger, but as one of my fellow Sangha members wrote, Sayo Thomas Deman posted recently on a quote from the Dalai Lama, "Do not let the behavior of others destroy your inner peace." A year ago, I had no idea that my daughter, who was here for a visit over Christmas, would be sitting Zazen with one of the founding members of the San Francisco Zen Center, or talking with an author and translator, Red Pine, at a local community gathering. We know that life is uncertain and that time flies by. What a good opportunity for us to sit. From reading one of the many emails, and I'm not sure who sent the question, what do you gain from meditation? The Buddha was once asked the same question many years ago, and he answered, nothing. The questioner then asked, well, what good is it? The Buddha answered, let me tell you what I lost through meditation. Sickness, anger, depression, insecurity, the burden of old age, and the fear of death. This year, our Sangha has grown, sometimes fitfully, and is still a safe haven where we can share our ideas and confusions. We acknowledge our responsibilities to each other. May we have each other's back silently and surely as we continue our growth, wherever it may lead us. At the end of the old year and at the beginning of the new year, one yet to start, it's a good time to be fully awake in the present moment. anything can happen. As we stumble through our days, we offer good wishes to everyone we meet. We wish you a new year of discovery and peace. Sit back and boil water for tea. I'd like to close with a thought from Reverend Gome Kobosi from his book, Everyday Suchness. Holding a warm heart, together with the people, I will move forward. Oh, this good year. May it be so.
Yeah, thank you very much. I guess kind of a cozy time of the year, especially if you're in the, winter climate. And but even in a very temperate climate, the temperature changes for the seasons are still there, and they're more subtle, but your body gets used to it, and feels the when winter comes. In fact, I remember one time we lived in Hawaii for about half a year, and it was we came in August and stayed till January or so. And as winter came in Honolulu, we were still going to the beach. It was high in the 70s, but the local natives, when neighbor said, "Oh, are you going swimming? Oh, it's too cold. It's winter time." You know, because they get used to it. Well, this time of year is also a time when family gets together. It's a hectic time. Sometimes they call it eustress, E-U, which means good. So it's a good kind of stress, but it's still stressful in terms of the hectic holidays and everything. And we have to sometimes, pause and say, "Oh, whew. We were partying, hardy partying, so we still have to take a breath once in a while. I was thinking also about Ken Wheeler's nice Dharma glimpse and the point about what did you gain, okay, in terms of maybe the past year or meditation, or you went to a retreat, or you read a book, or you know what did you get from it? And this is a perspective in which it's we don't ever think about, what do we give up or lose? Okay. We always want to get something, and it reflects a human, the natural human desire of gaining things. And this holds true for material gains and spiritual gains. And although a lot of times in the springtime we talk about spring cleaning and getting rid of things, but it's hard. We're very materialistic, and we're spiritual. We have spiritual materialism too. So it's very instructive when we think about not what we get from our spiritual practice or retreats, but what we lost, and we give it up, we let it go, whether it's our stubbornness, whether it's I guess what I'm trying to say is, a lot of times when we think about spiritual growth, you say, oh, I got this good insight, or wow. And there's a feeling of, you know, a positive feeling, talking to others about it. Wow, this is, okay. Whereas many times, real deep spiritual growth is, it's not a pleasant thing. It's a self-realization where you say, oh man, you know, your ego is exposed. And you say, gee, I'm pretty selfish. I was very self-centered. I was mean. I was impatient. And it's not a very pleasant feeling. It's kind of, you see your ugly self, your dark self. And when that's fully exposed, you know, that could lead to change. Instead of rationalizing it, denying it, and so forth. And we have to face that reality of ourselves. Now, I don't know if this is exactly a West-East difference in perspective, but I had read an experience where after the retreat, you know, the Westerners were glowing and positive, and there were some Eastern participants in the same retreat. And when they were asked, you know, about their experience, it wasn't a very pleasant experience for them. Their perspective on spiritual growth was very different. So that is instructive for us to keep going, to go deeper and deeper. There might be some positive aspects. It's a sour, sweet and sour kind of thing. And but it's not so much the sweet and sour aspect, or the you know, it's the reality of it. We see the truth about ourselves, because we shouldn't get too. We cannot just get attached to the positive aspects, but we shouldn't get attached to the negative aspects of victimizing ourselves either, or martyring ourselves or something. So it's not so much, and the same thing with joy and sorrow, you know, to really experience those things, it's not so much what is there, it's the supremeness, the completeness of the experience, the reality of it, you know. That's very instructive. Otherwise we could get victimized by the positive or the negative, the joy or the sorrow. Okay? If we get mired in the quicksand of, you know, over analyzing and conceptualizing and labeling and so forth. And so when we take stock of our year, coming to the end of the year now, it really behooves us to be honest, look at our front and back, our front porch and back porch, you know. Yeah, back porches, the reality is they're all messy and cluttered, you know. And we sweep up our front, stoop and everything. But that's the way it is, you know. And, of course, we got a lot of warts and blemishes in our personalities and so forth. And this, you got to be honest about that and keep going, you know. So, well, I want to share something about this holiday time in terms of our family get-togethers. Yesterday, I went to my brother's place. He hosts an annual, they call it mochi-chuki, mochi making, rice cake making. And it's always done at the end of the year and in the olden days. And some temples still do it the old traditional old-fashioned way where you pound rice and make rice cakes. It's not exactly rice cake, you know, in terms of, you could add sweet things to it, but it's rice, which is plain white rice, special rice, but, and you, in the old days, they have a big stone, a mortar, and instead of a pestle, they have a big wooden mallet, specially made, and you have to, you know, hold it with two hands, and you, two people are pounding this rice as one person kind of mixes the sticky rice in the middle of the mortar there, and they pound this rice and make it into a it's kind of a sticky mass, and then they separate that out into little balls, and then they flatten the balls, and it's called mochi. So it's sort of concentrated rice, and you could eat it in various ways. Nowadays, there's machines, small machines, and a lot of families, they have a machine, and you can do, it cooks the rice, and it shakes it, and mixes it around, sort of like a dough maker, and then you know, it's real hot, and then everybody gathers around a table. It's a very, sort of like, not a quilting bee exactly, but everyone's gathered around the table, and as the hot mochi comes out of the machine, they, you know, you take off a little piece, and then everybody, it's just pretty quick, you know, and you get all these little balls of mochi, white rice, and then everybody has cornstarch on their hands so it doesn't stick to the rice, and then they make it into a little patty. They put some in the Japanese culture. They make some special ones for the altar, you know, where you pile, make a bigger one, then a little smaller one, and make it, you pile it up, and you put it on the altar as an offering. Not as an offering, that's something that's sort of misinterpreted. Are you making an offering? Why you put, you know, food or make food offerings? Is the Buddha hungry? Well, it's sort of appreciation. Instead of, wow, we're going to eat this good stuff, put some in the altar. And of course, after a while, it's taken down and the family eats it. Okay? So it's not superstitious in any way, but it's a sign of respect. And being thankful for abundance. A lot of times when somebody, let's say in a family, if they have a family altar, if something good happens, or get a good grade, or get a gift, they'll put it at the altar, okay, to remind themselves about the causes and conditions. A lot of times good things came our way without any doings on our part, and we celebrate our blessings, sort of like that. And of course, there's other nuances, cultural nuances, that when you stack up the mochi, larger ones and then smaller ones on top, it sort of, it represents generations. So, you know, each generation build their life on a broad sense on the previous generation. You have your grandparents, your parents, okay, yourself, your children, okay, and but also at our family gatherings, it was kind of interesting where my brother, there's a Japanese market in Fresno called Central Fish, and he was buying some food, and he noticed for the first time they had these special green bottles of Buddha beer. He couldn't help, they're shaped, it's actually more shaped like a, what they call a hotei or a laughing Buddha type of a style that you see in a lot of Chinese restaurants. The beer comes from China, actually, and it's that big-bellied laughing Buddha. Really not. It's a misnomer, but it represents laughing. One of the seven Chinese gods in Chinese folklore. It's not really a Buddha. Like my father used to say, when one of the questioners visiting the temple once said, "What about those fat Buddhas? You rub the belly for good luck?" Said, "No, that's not right, you know." "No, but what about the fat Buddha?" I remember I heard over my father saying, "No, there are no fat Buddhas." And but that was the shape of the bottle. It was green. Hote with his arms up, you know. And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, laughing Buddha. It's a nice kind of representation or symbol. And it was lucky Buddha beer. So, of course, I had to drink. I had to drink a few bottles of Buddha beer. And people are joking around. "Oh, you're drinking. You want to get enlightened, huh?" And all this stuff. And of course, there's a lot of food at these family gatherings. My nephew Darren, every year he's sort of in charge of making the noodle soup, you know, nice hot udon, they call it, and that's his specialty. And noodles, of course, you eat it all year round, but especially end of the year, you eat noodles because noodles are long, and then again, in Japanese culture, you know, long noodles, long life, and things like this, okay, sentiments. The relatives, my mother was from Fowler, which is a small town south of Fresno, and my grandparents were raising grape farmers, grapes for raisins, and the farm is still there. My cousin Earl, and so because of my mother's roots in this area, I have a lot of cousins and nieces and nephews here, and when you get together at family gatherings, the guys, there was a tradition of, even when I was a teenager and visiting the men, my uncles and so forth, they would always have poker games, you know, friendly poker games. And this has evolved, and now every family get together, we have Texas Hold'em. Special chips and special tables, you know. But it's really, I don't go to casinos. I don't enjoy gambling, you know, for money. But the camaraderie, the fellowship around that table, you know. So I think it's the $5 buy-in, you know. And so it's not about the gambling, but it's joking around and laughing together. It's really an enjoyable thing. And maybe, of course, the football games, TV's on in the background, and, you know, it's quite a lively situation. It's very warm, kind of a family feeling. So when we think about, say, drinking and playing cards, what about the precepts? Is what the, in the Mahayana tradition, which is, you know, is Theravada school of Buddhism, is Southeast Asian countries like Thailand, Burma, Cambodia, where it's Theravada means the way of the elders. So they're preserving, it's the saffron colored robes, the monks. Usually that meant, you know, in a monastery, celibacy, and so forth, a lot of precepts. And then several hundred years after the Buddha's time, Mahayana tradition. It means Maha means great, and Yana means vehicle. So it means a great vehicle, not in terms of superiority, but you see, the Theravada way of the elders was kind of like a elite. Not everybody can give up the secular life and household and be a monk. A lot of people, maybe farmers and merchants, and they had social responsibilities and family and everything, and then the Buddhist spiritual life cut off to these people. Okay. And so the old way of renunciation, I guess you would call it, where you renounce the secular life, it was a very big split in lifestyle. So the Mahayana movement meant large vehicles. This is a vehicle to travel from the shore of ignorance to the shore of wisdom. This is a big vehicle. Everybody could get on. Okay. So it's not a matter of better comparing. But people are different. So you need different paths. So the Mahayana tradition is a very secular thing. They have, of course, monks and priests and ministers in the Mahayana tradition, but usually they could get married and they don't have that much as much emphasis on following a lot of precepts. Okay. But some basic precepts, a lot of times, it's that don't, get intoxicated with alcoholic beverages. And so a lot of times in the Mahayana tradition they say, it doesn't say don't drink, abstain from alcohol completely. But don't get intoxicated, where you lose your balance in terms of moderation and so forth. And maybe the same thing could be said for gambling for social purposes as opposed to getting addicted, and it could ruin family life and so forth. But and of course there's trade-offs on this. But the Mahayana tradition, and even Shinran Shonin, when he was exiled and he was living in the villages, he realized that these farmers who worked hard, and it's a cold winter time, they had some hot sake, and he, Shinran, broke tradition and he married, which as a former monk, and he said, well, he felt he was neither a layman nor a priest. So I loosened that kind of label. And I think there's a healthiness to that, where you look at our humanness. And in our Bright Dawn tradition, we try to go in that direction and take it even a further step. That we have a lay minister program. There doesn't have to be a huge gap between lay and clergy. See? So this is sort of our evolution of the Mahayana, a secular and lay emphasis. Okay? And we want to bring it to... I guess it's another aspect of... some people might feel, to be religious means I have to, go to the temple, be a member of a temple, and so forth. And these are, in our culture, society, we say, Sunday Christians, Sunday Buddhists. Okay. Only when you go, I don't go and follow this meditation group, or I don't follow this. Okay. But we're saying bringing the practice into everyday life. And it's not just listening to Dharma talks and doing traditional spiritual practices. But one can meditate, have quiet time, in the home. course, there's meditation in action, too. When you're driving, or there's a way to be spiritual when you're answering the phone or eating, and, you know, or going to the toilet. Yeah, that's my specialty. My toilet, guys. So, well, I'm rambling on here, but I was thinking of I used to do a Buddhist stand-up comedy routine, and I adapted it from a joke about drinking and playing cards. And Jodo Shinshu ministers are, Mahayana tradition, so they do both. And one time in a seminary thing, I was saying, it's a joke, but who do you think you are? He was always saying, this fellow ministerial student. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, I'm going to the ball game. Who do you think you are, Mickey Mantle? How are you going to get there? So I'm going to drive. Who do you think you are, Mario Andretti? What are you going to do afterwards? Well, I'm going to have a few beers and go play cards with my buddies. Hey, who do you think you are, Jodo Shinshu minister already? I mean, it's a joke, but it's sort of an insider joke. The ministers, a lot of ministers, they drink and they play cards among themselves. They go to a national conference meeting for, when you're part of a big hierarchy or so, and then they get together in the hotel room, and they get out their poker chip cases and so forth. But again, it's not, it's the fellowship and so forth. So, that's all for today's broadcast. You keep going, and until next time, you have a very beautiful, beautiful end of the year. Thank you.